Hello everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Men in Tights podcast. I do sincerely hope you all are having a lovely week and that you all will have an even better weekend. Please make sure to subscribe to the podcast on Spotify, Google Podcasts, CastBox, Radio Public, Breaker, or YouTube. Although, lately Breaker hasn't really been cooperating with the uploads of the podcast, but you can find it on Spotify, Google Podcasts, CastBox, Radio Public, and YouTube. Breaker, hopefully they'll get their shit together and get my shit on there. Anyways, yeah, you can find my podcast on all those platforms. And also, please be sure to follow me on Twitter at IamFazzaTude for any and all future podcast information. And on today's episode, I'll be sharing my thoughts and my predictions on the WWE's 11th annual Extreme Rules pay-per-view event. But before we get into all of that, I first want to talk about we got some news regarding the Flash film that has been in developmental hell or limbo or whatever you want to call it for the last however many years, I don't know. But from the Hollywood Reporter, I know I'm kind of behind on this story. Everybody talked about it already last week to death, but here I am. I wanted to save it for this podcast, that's why I had something to talk about. Anyways, from the Hollywood Reporter, an apparent exclusive, the headline, Flash Shocker, IT director Andy Muschietti in talks to tackle DC movie, that of course being The Flash. And I'm going to read a little bit of excerpts on here and then give my thoughts on that. Christina Hodson, who wrote Bumblebee and Birds of Prey, which of course Birds of Prey will be coming out in theaters next year, and no, I will not be talking about the rumored plot leaks for that film because I think it's bullshit. It was first leaked by WeGotThisCovered.com, who is a bullshit publication, and I'm not going to even bother wasting my breath on that. But anyways, Christina Hodson wrote Bumblebee and Birds of Prey, is being eyed to write the script, and Ezra Miller remains attached to play the fastest man alive. That is the opening of this article. And I'm going to read the next paragraph, and then I'm just going to give my quick thoughts on this. Alright, Andy Muschietti, the filmmaker behind the hit Stephen King adaptation IT, and the upcoming IT Chapter 2, which I cannot wait to see that, is in talks to direct the action-adventure project based on the DC Comics superhero. His partner and sister, Barbara Muschietti, will produce, joining Michael Disco on the project. And, you know, of course this means it. The previous writers and directors, John Francis Daley and Jonathan Goldstein, who most of us remember wrote Spider-Man Homecoming, and also wrote and directed Game Night, which Game Night was a pretty awesome movie. Homecoming, I liked Spider-Man Homecoming, and you can also check out my Spider-Man Far From Home review as well, if you want to talk, hear what I had to say on those. And I know not a lot of people liked Homecoming, and I understand why, and that's on them, it's how they feel, but Game Night I thought was an awesome movie, and I was optimistic that what they were going to present for The Flash would be a lot like what they did in that film, but since they've dropped out of the project, obviously that's not what we're going to get. But reading on, Ezra Miller, the actor who has long been attached to star as the fleet-footed hero, remains on board to star, which I love, and I am happy to hear that news because I love Ezra Miller. I think he's a very good actor. I've loved pretty much everything I've ever seen him in. I loved him in Perks of Being a Wallflower. I've loved him in the Fantastic Beasts movies so far. I've loved the little bits of him that I've seen as The Flash in Batman vs. Superman Suicide Squad and Justice League, you know, or at least the parts that I know for sure were Zack Snyder shot. I mean, and the other movie, I can't remember what, but it was the Stanford Prison Experiment, I think is what it's called. He was in that one, and he was very good in that film as well. So I'm hopeful that he is definitely going to stay on board as the star of the film, because he's you know, another one of the Justice League actors that I feel was kind of robbed on the proper depiction of the character that we were supposed to get for that film. And of course, this also means that the a script that we had heard about that he had co-written with comic book writer Grant Morrison. Obviously, that's not the script that they're going to be going with, which, yeah, kind of sucks, but at the same time, I mean, Christina Hodson, you know, she wrote the Birds of Prey script, she was tasked to write this one as well, and she's also going to be writing the Batgirl script, so obviously there's something about her that the executives at Warner Brothers likes to give her so much, you know, of the DC properties to write stories for. And of course, we will see what she gives us with Birds of Prey next year. And I have not seen Bumblebee. I've heard a lot of good things. I'm going to try to see it eventually and see if I like Bumblebee. Then it'll give me hope for what's to come with Birds of Prey, The Flash, and the eventual Batgirl script as well. And hopefully just the film, you know, it's actually going to be hopefully it'll be worth the wait, you know, because this film has been in, like I said, developmental hell or developmental limbo, whatever term is the term you prefer. I just hope it's going to be a good movie, and I hope that Ezra Miller will get the chance to give the performance of Barry Allen Flash that we know he can give us and that he wants to give us. And the next topic that I have on my little itinerary here is a couple of more of the Justice League Snyder Cut images that have been posted on social media lately by Zack Snyder. The first one being the one that kind of broke the internet over the previous weekend. It was Zack Snyder revealing a young Darkseid, or Uxis, or Uxis, or Uxass, as you know, we joked about on the Film Junkie Vodka stream last weekend. But yeah, he posted an image of what looks to be a pre-viz image of Darkseid, Uxis, from the history lesson sequence, which, again, if you've been keeping up with the Snyder Cut information and what I've been able to report on previous podcasts, it was supposed to be young Darkseid in the history lesson, not Steppenwolf. But yes, we have this image of Uxis without his armor, because he is not at his full Omega Beam Darkseid form just yet. He is but a mere warrior, you know, hunting for that anti-life equation. And of course, you know, we heard all the stories of Ray Porter being the voice actor for the role, which, and you know, been, even though they haven't exactly said the exact words that he's Darkseid, it's been more or less confirmed by Snyder and Ray Porter himself via Vero and Twitter. And it's just, looking at this image, it just makes me wonder, and many others within the Snyder Cut campaign and movement, which I'll get to that in a little bit once I finish this particular segment of the show. It just really makes you wonder what else in that history lesson that we were supposed to have seen but did not get to see. And just with the more of these images that Zack Snyder releases, it's just really makes it feeds the it makes me hungry to see that true Zack Snyder cut of Justice League, that full Zack Snyder cut of Justice League. And that brings me up to the next image that he decided to share as well, this time with Cyborg. And this one is just another, like, ugh, they really fucked up and dicked around with the Cyborg story in this film. Supposed to be so much more, and just, you know, because remember, Snyder kept promising that he was going to be the heart of the film, and this image is an image of Cyborg in a cemetery, with the caption, as Zack put it, let me see if I can pull up the actual image from him. That's right. I'm just kind of winging it at this point. No script for it this time. You know, usually I have a script, but this time I don't. But yeah, here's the caption that Zach has. It says, "Vic pounds the earth at the family plot." Which, you know, we can assume that it's him at the grave of his mother, because it's already established that his mom dies at the beginning part of his origin story. And then also the other information that later, that after the Star Labs incident, that Silas Stone was gonna die as well. So, but also people are speculating whether or not this was going to be him actually visiting a real cemetery, or is it was gonna be one of the projections inside the mother box from the Father's Day posts that Zack Snyder had shared as well. Which, who knows? It could be of a mother box, a Unity projection. Could be that he was at the actual gravesite of his mother. We don't know, as fans, we don't know. Only Zack Snyder knows, only people who made the movie know, and people close to the production of the film know. And like the cinematographer, Fabian, Fabian Wagner, he shared a behind the scenes look at the cyborg image, and it's a pretty eye-opening behind the scenes photo, because it shows that the entire backdrop was a green screen. Only thing that was real was, of course, Ray Fisher in the mocap suit, the mound of dirt simulating the grave, and the statue. Everything else was a green screen. And he's also shared a couple more behind-the-scenes photos showing off Batman, Wonder Woman, and Cyborg, and it's just, again, it's just so many things that were just, we were robbed from this movie that we were supposed to have seen. Because remember, the Justice League film that we got in the theater was 2 hours, give or take like a couple seconds. The original, the true Justice League Snyder cut, supposed to be 3 hours, 34 minutes. So that means there's at least an hour and a half that we know of missing from the movie. Probably, might even be a whole 2 hours when you if you take out all the Joss Whedon reshot stuff and repurposed dialogue from the theatrical cut. It could be 2 hours worth of a movie that we have not seen yet. And hopefully we will eventually get that. But as Zack Snyder himself said, it's all up to Warner Brothers if it's going to be released. And moving on to slightly more positive Snyder Cut information, we have another update, the last update that I'll be giving for Project Comic-Con. Because next weekend is San Diego Comic-Con, and that's where everything that has been built up for Project Comic-Con is going to come to fruition. And as of right now, the donation has reached up to $26,501 of a $35,300 goal. And where that number is going to be by this coming Monday, who knows? Because I believe Monday is the last day, or is it this Friday will be the last day for all of this stuff to, you know, become reality. And I don't know, just I'm just so proud to be part of this community, and just seeing all of us come together for this good cause of bringing awareness to the Snyder Cut, but more importantly, raising money to be donated to the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, because, again, we are doing that to honor the memory of Zack Snyder's daughter, Autumn, who had committed suicide 2 years ago, and we are doing this for her and for the family, to show that we are with them all the way, you know? And it's just, to me, it's such a heartwarming and just a beautiful thing to experience, you know? And just, but A lot of people keep questioning it's that after this Comic-Con, that what's gonna come next? Are they gonna be finished? And that's the thing. As I believe I even said it on the last podcast that this is not the end of the road. You know, say tomorrow, the Warner Bros. Says that they're gonna release Snyder Cut. That's not gonna be the end of the road for us. It's gonna be more than that, because like I said, the Snyder Cut is not the end game. You know, no pun intended. This campaign is so much more, and what is to come for the campaign after this, after San Diego Comic-Con this year, and after speaking with some of the people involved in Project Comic-Con, the next goal is to actually have a booth at San Diego Comic-Con for next year. That is going to be the next goal to work towards, is what the awesome people of Project Comic-Con are going to be planning. Because I believe to have to secure a booth for San Diego Comic-Con, you have to do it like a year in advance. So after next weekend, they're going to be working their asses off to try to make that happen. So we'll see how that goes, and I will have an update on that on my Comic-Con podcast that'll be coming in a couple weeks. So stay tuned for that one. And that brings me to this little segment that, you'll see it in the timestamps below. I've titled it, "What the Fuck is Happening to Us Snyder Cut Fans?" And the reason why I wanted to talk about this again is because of the infighting and the toxicity and just the butting heads and the clashing and just the overall bullshit of the whole thing. Just everyone attacking each other because it's like, it's like you're not a real supporter of the movement, and you should be doing this instead of doing that, and I mean, if you guys pay attention to some of the stuff I've spoken about on this podcast, and if you have followed what I do on Twitter especially, you'll know that yes, I am a big supporter of the Snyder Cut campaign, the Release the Snyder Cut movement and campaign. And my oldest brother, he's not active in the campaign, but he supports it and supports my involvement in it. And I was just talking to him last week, and we talked about it a little bit then. And then, yeah, because he loved Zack Snyder, he loved Man of Steel, he liked Batman vs. Superman. I don't remember if he told me that he loved it, I know he at least liked it, especially the Ultimate Edition. And he loves Watchmen, so he loves Zack Snyder's movies. So, and he wants to see the real Justice League film that Zack Snyder was going to give us. Because like me, like he has been following all the information of what the movie was supposed to be and what was supposed to be included in the original version, and he wants to see all that, just like I do, just like all of us do who are part of this campaign. And but it's just the tribal mindset that a lot of people seem to be having on Twitter especially. And where it's like some of the critics and the bloggers that are coming around and starting to support the campaign, who previously didn't like Zack Snyder's movies and didn't like his take on Batman and Superman from BVS or Man of Steel, that they want the more information that comes out, they are now being vocal and wanting to see the Zack Snyder cut of Justice League. And it's just, now people are butting heads over that, over like who is quote-unquote allowed to be part of the movement. And like, one of the biggest ones is Ben Shapiro. Honestly, I didn't know who he was until I started seeing people complaining about this guy. Apparently, he's a racist misogynist or whatever the fuck. I don't follow him. I don't know who he is. I don't know what he says. Apparently he said some shit about Muslims. And yeah, that's fucked up. But I don't follow him, so I can't really speak on who he is, on that. But he's tweeted a few times with the release of Snyder Cut hashtag, and now people are saying that if you support him, then you don't support the can you should you know you're not allowed to support the campaign or whatever it was, and just like yeah, I get it. He might say some stuff that is not PC or whatever you want to call it, but he is a big name on social media. He has thousands and millions of followers, so when he tweets out release the Snyder Cut, a lot of eyes are going to be on that tweet, and it's going to bring a lot of attention. Sure, some people are going to say some negative stuff about it. I get that, but it's bringing more attention to the campaign. Like might though just because one person who's not exactly a media darling for some people. I get that, but it's bringing more attention to the campaign. And what else? Sorry, like I said, I don't have a script for this one. I just had little bullet points of stuff that I wanted to talk about. And because last weekend, 4th of July weekend, I believe it was actually Friday, July 5th, we had a little Twitter campaign where we would tweet out the release Snyder Cut, tagging AT&T and Warner Brothers on there. And it made so much noise that we actually got an acknowledgement from Twitter mentions, with like 30 some thousand something tweets, or 40 or 50, I don't remember how many, but it was a big enough impact that we got noticed by Twitter mentions, and that's awesome. That's great. That's the kind of noise you want to make on social media, because I mean, especially on Twitter. Twitter making an impact on Twitter holds a lot of ground, it holds a lot of weight. And but people still fighting over, like who is a true supporter and who is just doing it for clout or whatever the fuck. It's like people who accuse others of only doing it for their own self-interest and not doing it for the good of the campaign or the movement. Like where I hear people criticizing like the guys from Real Anarchy, specifically criticizing John Aaron Garza, or criticizing Dave the Film Junkie for what they perceive as their anti-Zack Snyder because of what they report from their sources regarding information for the movie. Like when they talk about some of the pictures that Zack Snyder shares, saying that maybe he posts them in because he posts all of them in black and white, that maybe he does so to hide the unpolished visual effects. And people jump on him because of that quote, that video from Zack Snyder at his little film con back in March, where he said that there is a cut, it's done. There is a cut. I have several of them, and that it's up to Warner Brothers to release it. At that same convention thing, the guys from Comic Movie Marks, they asked him about the visual effects. He told them it's incomplete. So when Zack Snyder says that it's done, it means every scene he wanted to film was shot, was put together for that, for that complete 2 hour, 30, 3 hour, 34 minute runtime. The score was it was written by Junkie XL. Was might not I don't know if it was recorded, and it's not part of the Snyder Cut yet, at least. And the visual effects, not a it's more than 50% done. I at least know that, but it's not 100% done. They still need to finish off, because I believe from other people they said it's about like 80% complete. There's still about 20% of the special effects that need to be finished. So again, when he says it's done, it doesn't mean that the movie is like completely done, where they can just put it on shelves, for with a blue hard copy Blu-ray right now. No, they have to finish the visual effects, put it all together, add a proper score to it if they choose to, then it will be ready. And now when I see all these people that keep saying like, oh, it's never gonna be released, never gonna be released, all I can say to them is just Superman 2, The Richard Donner Cut. That movie came out, the Richard Donner Cut came out 26 years after the theatrical cut of Superman 2. And nobody had even known that the Richard Donner Cut existed until like 2000, 2001. And that's when the campaign for that movie to be released started. And whereas with the Snyder Cut of Justice League came out a year and a half ago. Within that first week of it being released, we all knew that there was an alternate Snyder Cut that, for all intents and purposes, would be superior and much, much better to the one we got in the movies, in the theater, I mean. So, when people keep saying, oh, it's never going to be released, never going to be released, there's literally five versions of Blade Runner that have been released since its theatrical run. There's two versions of Superman 2, two versions of Halloween 6, two versions of Apocalypse Now, two or three versions of Alien 3. Hell, there's even a sort of alternate version of Spider-Man 3, you know, dubbed the Editor's Cut. It's on the limited edition collection set that they released when Homecoming came out. There has been alternate cuts and director's cuts and extended cuts of movies released for years. So to say that, you know, the Snyder Cut is never going to be released is ridiculous. You know, like even Ray Fisher said, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. But it's just the way people keep, everyone keeps fighting over this. It's just, it's a big reason why I'm not as vocal as others are on my support of the Snyder Cut campaign, because as much as I really, really want to see the movie, if people are going to be behaving like this, then part of me hopes that we don't get it, because it's just, I don't know. I want to see the movie, but I don't want to be involved in the bullshit. That's all. All right, I'm gonna take a quick break now. It's very much needed after all that. And when I do return, I will be discussing the apparent apparent conspiracy theory wrestling fans have concocted with regards to the Evolve 10th Anniversary Show and AEW's Fight for the Fallen happening at the same time Saturday night. And then I will get to my predictions for WWE's Extreme Rules pay-per-view. So don't go anywhere. I will be right back. Alright, I am back. Thank you all for sticking around. Let's get back into this. Alright, so yeah, the Evolve 10th Anniversary Show, or Evolve 131, and AEW's Fight for the Fallen pay-per-view events will both be airing the same time Saturday night, AEW's, you know, on pay-per-view, on BR Live, Bleacher Report Live, on Fight.tv, I believe, as well. And Evolve will be on the WWE Network. And when WWE announced that they were going to be airing the Evolve show on the network the same night as the AEW event, fans immediately jumped on the whole, WWE is scared, they're doing this to spite AEW, blah 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 blah. It's like, they clearly have not been paying attention to the relationship that WWE has with Evolve over the last 4 or 5 years. They've had a working relationship with them for a long time now. They do talent exchanges, particularly with the NXT crew. That's why a lot of the NXT talent are going to be on the Evolve pay-per-view airing on Saturday. And, you know, like, Adam Cole is going to be there, Matt Riddle, Drew Gulak, Akira Tozawa, I believe, is supposed to be another one that's on there. But yeah, WWE has been working towards having, you know, promotions like Evolve, Progress, and a couple other indie promotions that they've been working with. They've been in the plannings and working stages of getting some of them to have their shows airing on the WWE Network for years now. You know, and I've been reading about that for like at least 4 years. So the fact that they're airing the Evolve anniversary show is not, to me, it is a nice little sort of surprise, but not like a big surprise. Like, oh, they're airing other wrestling promotions on the network. Like, no, I've known, a lot of us have known that they've been trying to do this for years now. But because, you know, fans are on the AEW bandwagon, and you know, I just want to say, I support AEW 100%. I've loved the pay-per-views that they've given us so far. And I can't wait to watch Fight for the Fallen as well. But to say that there's a conspiracy that WWE's trying to spite AEW by airing the Evolve event on at the same time on the network on Saturday. Well, first of all, the Evolve event was announced back in April. Fight for the Fallen, I don't remember when it was announced, but I'm pretty sure the Evolve 10th anniversary event is probably happening that night, because maybe that day is the actual 10th anniversary of the first show for Evolve. But again, WWE has been trying to get Evolve and Progress and other promotions on the WWE Network for years. It has nothing to do with AEW. Honestly, I'm pretty sure people at WWE, you know, or at least the higher-ups at WWE, couldn't care less about AEW. I'm sure they're thinking, awesome, proud of Cody and everyone else involved, let them, you know, let them have their show, raise the money for that charity that I believe is supposed to be victims of gun violence, I think is what they're raising money for. But yeah, my opinion is that they're not doing it to spite AEW. They're not doing it to stick it to them. Which is why it's kind of funny the comments that Kenny Omega made when the announcement was done a few weeks ago. And he's, of course, deleted the original tweet, but I have it pulled up right here. It says, "If lining your pockets with blood money is okay, then what's wrong with trying to undermine a charity show for victims of gun violence? I hear that healthy competition is supposed to be a good thing, and yet I can't help but feel like I'm gonna be sick." And while I understand the sentiment that he was trying to make with that tweet, a lot of fans jumped on him immediately to point out that his boss, the Khan family, they've had their dealings with the royal family of Saudi Arabia as well. And then he eventually deleted it, and then he posted this tweet shortly after, saying, "I've said my piece, and it opened the door to a very toxic environment. It wasn't a message to fans or the boys, just the decision makers. I wish everyone wrestling on any show that day all the best, that is all." Now, to me, that comes off as just him trying to backtrack and cover his own ass. And I love Kenny Omega, and I know he's not going to be listening to this, because why the fuck would he? But, yeah, you kind of made yourself look stupid on that one. Sorry, Kenny. But, that's fine. I'm excited to watch both shows. The card for Evolve looks like it's going to be an awesome show. AEW Fight for the Fallen looks like it's going to be an awesome show as well. The only thing for me is deciding which one I'm going to watch live, which I'm probably going to end up watching Fight for the Fallen live, because at least with the Evolve show, I can watch it on demand on the network anytime I want to. Probably I'll watch it on demand then on Sunday, or I'll probably watch the encore showing after Fight for the Fallen, because, you know, the WWE Network always does an encore showing of the pay-per-views about an hour afterwards. So I'll probably check it out then. Either way, there is no conspiracy. There is no, you know, sticking it to AEW. They just happen to have the show on at the same time. That is all. Alright, now, let's get to the ECW, sorry. Alright, now, let's get to the Extreme Rules predictions. First matchup we have is the Cruiserweight Championship match, Drew Gulak defending against Tony Nese. And this is a match that I'm very much looking forward to because they do have a lot of history. They fought each other years ago. I believe it was in the Cruiserweight Classic. I'm not 100% sure, but I know they did fight in the Number One Contenders Tournament that earned Tony Nese his spot at WrestleMania this year, where he won the championship from Buddy Murphy. And of course, Tony Nese lost the championship at Stomping Ground to Drew Gulak. Even though Drew Gulak did not pin him, he pinned Akira Tozawa. So that's Tony Nese's gripe with that he may have the championship, but he didn't pin him. Therefore, he's not the real champion. And so I'm very much looking forward to that because, as I keep saying, 205 Live. You people that, you know, complain about the main roster of Raw and SmackDown product, want to see great wrestling, you need to be watching 205 Live, because that is some of the best wrestling that you will see all week from WWE. Trust me, it is. Even this week, when I was watching it, they had a no-holds-barred, or I believe it was no, they actually called it a anything-goes match in the main event. It was Oney Larkin against Ariya Daivari, and that was an awesome match. An awesome, awesome, awesome match with some pretty gnarly spots. The one that got me was the trash can spot, and if you've seen the match before already, then you'll know what I'm talking about. Oof, that one got me. But my prediction is that Drew Gulak is going to retain the championship in this one. I don't know if he'll win it cleanly. Probably he'll win it with some shenanigans, who knows, but and we know it's all, we already know it's going to be on the pre-show, so let's just, pre-show. And then the next match that I have up listed on here, unless they add a new match, between now when I'm recording this and then when this goes live, I don't know, if they add another match on the card, oh well, I didn't predict it. But yeah, the one that we found out officially on SmackDown Live this week, Aleister Black versus Cesaro, because it turned out that Cesaro was the one who knocked on the door of Aleister Black's little dark room to answer his challenge, and not exactly who I thought it was going to be, but, and like, as Palpatine said in Phantom Menace, of a surprise to be sure, but a welcome one. I think that's how he said it. Probably didn't say it correctly, but whatever, I don't care. But yeah, it is a welcome surprise. Cesaro versus Aleister Black, it's going to be an awesome match. If it gets the time that it deserves, probably won't. But who knows, we shall see. Because they've been building up Aleister Black with these promos for the last about three months, I believe. So, you would think that he has to get the big win for this one, right? So, either way, I'm just excited to see this because Aleister Black is a phenomenal athlete. Cesaro is a freak of nature when it comes to wrestling. So, this one, my prediction is Aleister Black, but at the same time, I don't care who wins this one because I just want to enjoy the match. And the next matchup I have on my list is The Revival versus The Usos for the Raw Tag Team Championship, and I gotta be honest, I really don't give a shit about this match because all that Uzi hot and shaving each other's backs bullshit really turned me off from this feud. I mean, because I love The Revival, I love The Usos, but this storyline is just, it was so stupid, again, shaving the backs, and then the Uzi hot, and just, it was just so stupid, I hated it, we all hated it, and just, I thought that the story was done, I thought it was, but apparently it's not. I guess they probably thought, hey, we never gave it a real ending, so let's just throw it together for one more match on the pay-per-view. I'm sure it's going to be a really good match, because Usos are awesome, Revival are awesome. But my prediction, but more so my hope, is that the Revival will retain the championships. Please, God, retain the championships. And then next up, the other match that we found out officially this week. We kind of figured that was what they were going to do as of last week. Ricochet versus AJ Styles for the United States Championship. This is another one that I'm very excited to see because I'm a fan of both guys, as I've said many times on this podcast already. Ricochet is awesome. My first exposure to him was as Prince Puma on Lucha Underground. And AJ Styles, I've watched him since the beginnings of TNA Wrestling, which of course now is Impact Wrestling. Been a fan of his from the first time I watched a TNA Wrestling show. When I was still living in New York, I used to watch the syndicated TNA Explosion show. I forgot what channel I used to watch it on, but yeah, I used to watch that, and that's when that was the first time I got to watch a TNA wrestling show, and I got to see AJ Styles on there for the first time, and I was a fan instantly, and I've been a fan of his ever since. So, almost 20 years I've been an AJ Styles fan. So, of course, I am very much looking forward to seeing this one, because these are two of my favorites in WWE right now, and I just hope that they will get the time that they both deserve to deliver the phenomenal match that we all know they can give us. And I mean, for me, like if it goes more than 15 minutes, then I'll be satisfied. But because it's a WWE pay-per-view, it's gonna be 4 hours, and they got as of right now 10 matches, and they're gonna have their segments in between these matches. So I don't know if this match is going to get the time that it deserves. But my prediction as of right now is Ricochet to retain the championship. But if not, and if AJ Styles wins the title, then they'll probably have a rematch at SummerSlam. And, we'll see where they go from there. And in the next match that I had that they officially announced this week as well. It is a last man standing match, Braun Strowman versus Bobby Lashley, a feud that nobody gave a shit about until last week's Raw when they had that false count anywhere and they crashed through the entrance screen, and it was awesome. Corey Graves said, "Holy shit," uncensored live on television, and when I tweeted that out, my notifications blew up on Twitter. So that was fun. But yeah, that one segment actually made fans care about this Bobby Lashley Braun Strowman story. It made me care about the story. And they're gonna have a last man standing match, which, I mean, a lot of last man standing matches that they've had in WWE over the last 20 years? Yeah, 20 years. It's the first one that I remember. Was the Rock versus Mankind at St. Valentine's Day Massacre, where it ended in a double countout. And they've had quite a few Last Man Standing matches since then, and some have been awesome, like Rock versus Mankind, like Shawn Michaels and Triple H at Royal Rumble 2004, Jericho and Triple H at Fully Loaded 2000. What's another great Last Man Standing match? And the couple of Last Man Standing matches Triple H and Randy Orton had were pretty cool too. And then we've had some ones that can't really think of off the top of my head, but they're there. Oh, and also the awesome Last Woman Standing match at Evolution last year with Becky Lynch and Charlotte Flair. But if the way things went down in that match, that Falls Count Anywhere match on Raw, is an indication of what's to come for this Last Man Standing match. I am excited, actually very much excited to see this. And I hope that they will go all out and balls to the wall with this one. I hope they do not hold back. I mean, because it's going to be in Philadelphia, the home of ECW, the extreme home of wrestling. So they better not disappoint on this pay-per-view, because it's Extreme Rules and it's happening in ECW home. So they better deliver on the extreme part of the show. So this last, especially this Last Man Standing match, better fucking deliver, and I think it will. And I predict that Braun Strowman is gonna win this, and we'll see if this will be the end of the feud. Who knows? Now we also have the Triple Threat SmackDown Tag Team Championships. Daniel Bryan and Rowan defending against New Day, defending against Heavy Machinery. Now, I really have no idea how this match is going to go. I'm sure it's going to be an exciting match. That we know, we at least know that. We know that. We know at the very least we know it's going to be an exciting match. All three teams, I am a fan of. I know some people aren't so sure about Heavy Machinery, but I love them. I like them on NXT. And Otis, he cracks me up. And plus, I really loved on SmackDown this week when Corey Graves said Otis's dad, Otis's uncle and dad are the same person. I about choked on my soda when he said that. And obviously, because it's a multi-man or multi-person tag team match, there's going to be all kinds of shenanigans going on. And honestly, like, I love all three teams, so I wouldn't mind either one of them winning, but because I feel like they want to give the titles some prestige and make it mean something, that I feel like they might want to continue the reign of Daniel Bryan and Eric Rowan as champions. So my prediction is for Daniel Bryan and Eric Rowan to retain the championships. And now we come to the SmackDown Women's Championship. The SmackDown Women's Championship. Must be a late night for me. Keep saying and stumbling over my words. But again, that's what happens when I don't have script. You know, like hell, at the beginning of this segment, I almost said, here we go, we come with ECW. But anyways. Bayley versus Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross in a 2-on-1 handicap match. Don't know why I said it that way, but yeah, it's Bayley defending against Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross because on Raw they had a beat the clock challenge. Bayley against Sarah Logan, and then Nikki Cross representing Alexa Bliss taking on Dana Brooke. Nikki Cross got the shortest time, so she chose for a 2-on-1 handicap match so that it'd be her and her best friend Alexa Bliss taking on Bayley. And of course, you know, we all like are waiting for that moment where Nikki Cross and Bliss have their explosion, and either Bliss turns on Nikki or Nikki comes to her senses and turns on Bliss. I don't think we're gonna get that here though. Instead, what I think we're gonna get is that Nikki Cross is gonna get the pin on Bayley, and that she will be recognized as the women's champion. Even though on the contract signing on SmackDown this week, she said that her and Bliss would be co-champions. I don't think they're going to be co-champions. I think Nikki's going to get the pinfall, and she will be the women's champion, and Bliss will not like that. But talking with my brother, another possibility that he actually brought up that I actually wouldn't mind seeing. Sasha Banks shows up, since they keep teasing about Bayley not having a friend. Sasha Banks returns, makes this look like she's going to help Bayley, but instead she turns on Bayley because she is resentful of her moving on from their tag team so quickly. And honestly, I would love to see that, but we'll see. And then next up we have the tag team match that we didn't know we wanted to see, and honestly I don't know how many people actually wanted to see it, but I was, when they made it official, I thought, hey, why not? Roman Reigns and The Undertaker versus Drew McIntyre and Shane McMahon in a no-holds-barred match, which is just the same as Extreme Rules and No DQ, so I don't even know why they have to give it these fancy names. But yeah, Roman Reigns and Undertaker versus Drew and Shane. I have no idea how the hell this match is going to go. Keep hearing a lot of rumors of what's going to come with regards to SummerSlam. Rumors of Undertaker versus Drew McIntyre at SummerSlam. Hey, if that's what's going to happen, cool. I would love to see that. Also heard that they're going to save that for WrestleMania. Again, cool. I would love to see that. Either way, I have no idea what to expect. This is the one match on my list that I did not write down who I predict to win. Because just, this is a match that it can honestly go either way. And, you know, like, do you want to have Undertaker, like, you know, get a nice victory? Or do you want Drew to get the rub by pinning the Undertaker? I don't know. It's like, this is a match that can go either way, and honestly, I don't mind it going either way. So, as long as it's a great match, I won't care who wins. That's my prediction for it. Be a great match, I don't care who wins. And then moving on to the WWE Championship match, Kofi Kingston defending against Samoa Joe. And this one is another one that I feel like it's going to be an awesome match if they give it the time it deserves. Please give this match at least 20 minutes, or even just between 15 and 20 minutes. I'll be happy if that's what you do. But I am excited because, again, just like with AJ Styles, I am a big fan of Samoa Joe. I've been a fan of his since I first saw him on TNA Wrestling. I believe 2005 is when he joined TNA Wrestling. I didn't get to follow him when he was in Ring of Honor, but I became aware of him in 2005 when he joined TNA, and have been a fan of his ever since then. So, as much as I really, really want him to be WWE Champion, I would love so much for him to be WWE Champion, I'm predicting that Kofi Kingston is gonna retain and continue his title reign, at least until SummerSlam. You know, depends on who he fights at SummerSlam, I don't know. But at the same time, this could end in a DQ finish, and it leads to another match at SummerSlam, who knows. But as of right now, my prediction is Kofi Kingston will walk out WWE Champion. Yeah. And then which I'm sure is going to be the main event of the pay-per-view, especially because they have their pictures on the poster for the pay-per-view. Seth Rollins and Becky Lynch versus Baron Corbin and Lacey Evans. Winner takes all. Extreme Rules match for the Universal and the Raw Women's Championship. I mean, I'm sure this is going to be an awesome match. I mean, even though a lot of people don't like Lacey Evans and Baron Corbin, having it be an Extreme Rules match means that they can do whatever they want and they can hide their shortcomings in that way. But just the way they've been booking these segments with Seth Rollins and Becky Lynch is, oof. And talking with my brother on the phone last week about this, so fucking cringe. Cringe, cringe, cringy, cringe, cringe. Especially that backstage interview segment on Raw that got interrupted by Maria Kanellis. When Becky was like, this guy? Oh my fucking god, I wanted to throw my TV out the window. I hated it so much, I really did. Oh man. But I'm still excited to see how the match is gonna go. I just hope I will never have to see segments like that again, but I'm sure they're going to keep on doing it because they are pretty much going all in, no pun intended, with the Becky Lynch, Seth Rollins on-screen chemistry, where basically it's like Seth Rollins is Becky's bitch, pretty much. And hell, they even got the new t-shirt that it says, the man's man. I'm sure it'll be a big seller. But, you know, I'm not buying that shirt. Either way, I'm predicting Seth Rollins and Becky Lynch to win. That's it. But we also, you know, teased on Raw and SmackDown this week, Paul Heyman saying that Brock Lesnar will cash in his Money in the Bank briefcase and contract at Extreme Rules. But he said it will be on Kofi or Seth Rollins. So there's that little looming threat hanging above everybody that we don't know how this is going to go. What would I like to see him cash it in on? I honestly don't know. But if he is indeed going to cash in, might be on Kofi, because we keep thinking it's going to be Seth, but what if he cashes in on Kofi? Again, who knows what's going to happen? We shall see at Extreme Rules this Sunday. Alright, and that is it for this week's edition of the Men in Tights podcast. I hope you all enjoyed listening to what I had to say on those topics and the Extreme Rules predictions. If you didn't enjoy it, thanks for tuning in anyway. Now, I have a bit of an announcement to make. Next week, I won't be doing my usual shooting the shit podcast that I usually do after the pay-per-views. And my reason for that is because next weekend, as I mentioned before, is San Diego Comic-Con. And I'll be focusing on everything going on with that event. So that I will have my notes and information to provide for you on the next podcast. So I'll be skipping next week. I won't be doing my Shooting the Shit podcast. So sorry for everyone who likes to listen to those. And I will instead be returning on July 26th. With my recap of the major stories coming out of San Diego Comic-Con. And it will also be the 1 year anniversary of this podcast. You know, give or take a day or two. So all of my attention is going to be on making that the best episode of the podcast yet. And also, for those of you who like to check out the podcast on YouTube, this will be the last time that I put up photos for you to look at on the screen for whatever topic that I happen to be discussing at the moment during the podcast. I know some might not be happy about that, and I totally get it. I do. I understand. But it's a decision I've been debating on doing for a while and thought it would be the right decision for me with regard to my podcast and my content and what I present for you guys. So instead of various photos being on the screen for you to look at, instead, whatever the thumbnail is for the podcast, that's what will be on the screen for the YouTube uploads of the podcast, starting with that next episode, talking about San Diego Comic-Con, and my, you know, the one first year anniversary of the podcast, which will also be the 50th episode of the podcast. So I'm pretty excited for that, and I hope you all will enjoy hearing me discuss, all of the topics to come out of that one. And again, don't forget to subscribe to the Minutides Podcast on Spotify, Google Podcasts, CastBox, Radio Public, Breaker, or YouTube, even though, like I said at the beginning, Breaker has been kind of fucking around with my stuff. But you can get it on Spotify, Google Podcasts, CastBox, Radio Public, and YouTube. And again, follow me on Twitter at IamFozitude for all podcast updates, or if you want to chat with me about whatever. And you can also follow me on Instagram at Fozitude to enjoy some of the pictures and memes that I like to post up there from time to time. Feel free to support the podcast by donating on Patreon. If you would like to help improve the overall quality of the brand, you can make a contribution to the Hall of Justice. That is the nickname of my makeshift recording studio. The link to that is in the description, as well as the links to the articles I cited throughout this podcast for you guys. And as always, thank you all so much for tuning in and for subscribing. I love each and every one of you, and I appreciate every single one of you who tunes in every week, or almost every week, and subscribes to the podcast, whether it's on YouTube, whether it's on Spotify, or CastBox, or Radio Public, or wherever you like to listen to this on. I truly and genuinely appreciate you guys. I really do. And also, shout out to let me pull up her Twitter real quick, because I don't want to get the name wrong while I'm thanking her for this. Here we go. Ah, yes. Thank you to, it's at TruthLoveFaith on Twitter for helping me out this week. I was kind of having a rough time, not feeling really like myself for a few days and just not feeling right, you know? And she helped me get through the last couple of days, so thank you to her for that, and I hope she's listening, and if not, I'll send this podcast to her directly, and hopefully she'll like that. And again, like I said, I love each and every one of you, and I appreciate every one of you. Hope you all enjoy your weekend. Please go spend it with your loved ones if you can. This has been the Men in Tights Podcast. I am Julian, and I will see you all next time.